But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees?" Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I am? Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" So they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." My point there in reading that passage is aimed at the character of Elijah here. We see Christ ministering to different types of people. I hope you notice there that the one group he called hypocrites, those are the people that didn't even want to know the truth, but they were the hypocrite is the person who always gives some sort of outward acquiescence to the truth, but doesn't really want to know it. Whereas to the disciples later, he said, "Oh, you have little faith," and they just had little faith. I mean, they'd quickly forgotten. They didn't have the bread, and this was a bad thing. We don't have anything to eat. And Christ says, "Don't you remember? I mean, bread is no problem for me. But I'm talking about the leaven of the scribes and Pharisees." They had little faith, but the scribes and Pharisees were just outright hypocrites. Well, then later on, he comes to Caesarea and Philippi, and this is what I want to focus on just briefly here. Who do men say that I am? And I bring this up because we have a problem nowadays with the character of Christ. They had a problem with the character of Christ. Who do men say that I am? For us, we need to ask, who do people think, who do men say Jesus Christ is now? Is he, you know, the guy that just kind of floats around from campfire to campfire and plays a guitar and everybody just kind of like smokes weed and says, and anyway, just kind of floats around and makes everybody feel better? I find this intriguing when Christ says, who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? He says, well, some say Elijah, some say John the Baptist. Now remember, Christ earlier, and we don't have time to look at it, Christ earlier had connected the ministry of John the Baptist to Elijah. So it's intriguing that Christ's ministry was connected with Elijah. Now, if you know much about Elijah, we're going to look at him very briefly this morning. We do not have time to do a complete character study of Elijah here this morning. But Elijah was anything but warm and fuzzy. I mean, can we agree on that point? He was not a warm and fuzzy, everybody feel good kind of a guy. Not the kind of guy that shows up to Ahab's court and says, "We're not going to have rain around here anymore." And it doesn't rain, winds up not raining for 3 years, and they have a tremendous famine. And that starts with Elijah. My point here, just briefly before we move on, a very small point, and that is, if you want to know what Christ was like, and I know we tend to have this tendency to like pick out certain things like, oh, he was so nice to the woman at the well, and I don't think he was all that nice. And some people say he was nice to Nicodemus. I don't think he was all that nice to Nicodemus at all, quite frankly. And other times, I mean, one thing about Christ, if you actually look at his interactions are pretty tough most of the time. There are other times when he's very tender, Mary and Martha, the death of Lazarus, for example. But most of the time, he was a pretty tough guy. And it's intriguing that people connect his ministry to that of Elijah. They don't connect his ministry to some warm and fuzzy person that maybe they knew. They connect him to the ministry of Elijah, which was a tough ministry. And Elijah certainly made some enemies. With that in mind, we want to look at the character of three people today. So what I want to do is I want to go back to the book of 1 Kings, and we're going to go to, let me pull the right one up here. 1 Kings chapter 18. And I want you to be able to remember this because, remember this chapter because everybody knows about the conflict with Ahab over the on Mount Carmel, Mount Carmel, shall I say, the prophets of Baal versus Elijah. Most of us know that story. But what we don't know so much is another story in or another account in the exact same passage or exact same chapter, I should say. And I'm going to read it to you, and we're going to look at the character of the three main people in this chapter. This is 1 Kings 18, verses 1 through 19. Three characters here: Obadiah, a prophet you've probably never heard much of, or not really even a prophet, actually more like a king's chamberlain or king's steward. Probably haven't heard too much about him. Elijah, you've heard of, and Ahab, and I'm sure Jezebel you've heard of too. Jezebel does show up here, but she's not an actress in this. She's just referenced. 1 Kings 18, 1 through 19. And it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, "Go present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the earth." So it's been 3 years, haven't had rain. So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab, and there was a severe famine in Samaria. And Ahab had called Obadiah, who was in charge of his house. Now, Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. Remember that. For so it was, while Jezebel massacred the prophets of the Lord, that Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them, 50 to a cave, and had fed them with bread and water. And Ahab had said to Obadiah, "Go into the land to all the springs of water and to all the brooks. Perhaps we may find grass to keep the horses and mules alive so that we will not have to kill any livestock." So they divided the land between them to explore it. Ahab went one way by himself, and Obadiah went another way by himself. Now as Obadiah was on his way, suddenly Elijah met him, and he recognized him, and he fell on his face and said, "Is that you, my lord Elijah?" And he answered him, "It is I. Go tell your master Elijah is here." So he said, this is Obadiah talking now, "Have I sinned that you are delivering your servant into the hand of Ahab to kill me? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to hunt for you." When they said, "He is not here," he took an oath from the kingdom or nation that they could not find you. And now you say, "Go tell your master Elijah is here." And it shall come to pass, as soon as I am gone from you, that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you to a place I do not know. So when I go and tell Ahab, and he cannot find you, he will kill me. But I, your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Was it not reported to my Lord what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord? How I hid 100 men of the Lord's prophets, 50 to a cave, and fed them with bread and water? And now you say, "Go tell your master Elijah is here. He will kill me." Then Elijah said, "As the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely present myself to him today." So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. Then it happened when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said to him, "Is that you, O troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, in that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." Well, how are we to live when the wicked are, shall we say, gaining ascendancy and beginning to control things? This may or may not have to do with this present challenge that we're living under, this lockdown, as John has properly said. I believe I'm not talking to anyone who isn't locked down in some county or whatever. We know that in our country, that God is no longer acknowledged. That we know. We also know that the people in power and authority are trading their authority for power. And just to give you an example, we do have a First Amendment that guarantees the right of the people to peaceable assembly. It has nothing to do with withdrawing that right in the First Amendment. By the way, the First Amendment is also the one that guarantees the freedom to worship. We have no statement in that First Amendment that allows a prohibition for a plague, either real or imagined. And this is a real sickness, make no mistake about that. But there is no prohibition there. Of course, as we said before, it seems like every time there's a crisis, the ability of us to function as Christians gets less and less. Our freedom is being impinged upon. And lest we have a difficult time understanding the word freedom, of course, those who hate Christ, they mean freedom from his commandments. But we as Christians, when we talk about freedom, we understand that as freedom to obey Christ. That's how we understand it. Freedom for us is the ability to obey Christ without threat and without imprisonment and without opposition. That for us is freedom. Well, clearly the freedom of those who love God was being infringed upon by Ahab and Jezebel here. So let's take a look here and see how both Elijah and Obadiah handled this problem that Ahab was presenting. And it was a problem, because the chronicler of the kings here says twice that Jezebel, Ahab's number one, shall we say, counselor here, was a murderess. And Ahab was cooperating in that. In verse 4, we see, "For so it was while Jezebel massacred the prophets of the Lord." That it was said in verse 13. Was it not reported to my Lord what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord and hid 100 men of the Lord's prophets, 50 to a cave, and fed them with bread and water? So first of all, in the character of Ahab, we know that he was a murderer, and the writer of the Kings lays it on Jezebel, if you will, but certainly all this happened with the approval of Ahab, as we see later on in the murder of Naboth for his vineyard. So we are dealing with, make no mistake, we are dealing with a wicked king who has no problem murdering the prophets of the Lord. That's who we are. Now, let's ask ourselves, what kind of power did this king have? Was he just kind of a bad guy, murdering people on the sly, and no one knew? It wasn't outright. Well, this man had an awful lot of power. Look at what Obadiah says here. He says, verse 10, he's complaining to Elijah, saying, "Elijah, this king's been looking for you all over the place, and he can't find you. And if you don't show up when I tell him you're going to show up, he's going to kill me, because he sure has been trying to kill you." Listen to this. Verse 10, "As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to hunt for you. And when they said he is not here, he took an oath from the kingdom or nation that they could not find you." Tell you what, when you have the power to go to other nations and say, "Hey, I'm looking for this guy, and you're going to let me look for him, or you're going to look for him yourself." And then you have the power to take an oath from that other king that other king can't find him, then you, Ahab, have an awful lot of power. In other words, it sounds like these other kings didn't tell Ahab to go get lost. If you had the power that Ahab had, you'd say, "Well, so what if he is here? What are you going to do about it?" But apparently Ahab had that kind of power. They were scared of Ahab. So it's not just the fact that he killed the prophets. He also was a man of of power. And it looks like even the other nations were scared of the guy. So if the other nations are scared of the guy, you know that the people who love God were also scared of him. And we know this because Obadiah said, I am feeding these folks in a cave. And there's a lot more that we can say about Ahab. Just very quickly, I'm intrigued with what he says here in verse 18 or verse 17. Now it happened when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said to him, is that you, O troubler of Israel? Now let's just take a look at chapter 21 and verse 3, I think it is. And actually it's not 21:3, it's actually 21 and verse verse 20, sorry. In 21:20, now we just saw he said, is that you, O troubler of Israel? And then they aren't together for a while. They don't see each other. And then when Ahab kills Naboth for his vineyard, and if you don't know this, that's account, it's in chapter 21. Ahab was a really wicked man. Coveted his neighbor's field, which the 10th commandment says, or his vineyard, the 10th commandment says very specifically, you can't do that. You cannot covet anything that is your neighbor's. And he mentions things like his field. And that's exactly what Ahab does here, a strict violation of the 10th commandment. He goes and covets it. And we talked about this before. Once you covet and you keep that going, after a while that coveting leads to murder. And I think James says the same thing. Anyway, in this case it did. And so he takes Naboth's vineyard, he covets it, and then his wife Jezebel, his counselor there, figures out a way to kill Naboth that everybody would that no one would have a problem with. And Ahab then, after he's killed Naboth and his sons, by the way, we see that in another passage, he goes out to take possession of the vineyard. And at this point, and I think Ahab probably went out in victory with a whole, posse of people to declare his victory. And who's standing in the moment of triumph? Who's standing in the vineyard except his old buddy Elijah? And so Ahab sees him, right? And he says, have you found me, O my enemy? Now, earlier he called him the troubler of Israel. Now he's saying, oh, my enemy. And now we find out what it's really about. You know, earlier it was kind of like a political comment, like, and you're troubling the land here. Now it's more personal, and we see exactly what's going on here. Have you found me, oh, my enemy? It's always been about Ahab, about his power, and it's always been about his prestige. And that's exactly home, and he's sulking, and Jezebel comes to him and says, you're the king, aren't you? And so she appealed to his power there. Understand that that is what we are dealing with here, the character of Ahab. Now, very briefly, the character of Elijah, we won't spend too much on this. We got the character of Ahab, now the character of Elijah. Now, we know an awful lot about Elijah, but from this passage, I want to kind of discuss this and maybe some surrounding passages as well. First of all, Elijah had an incredible amount of courage most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time he did. We just saw how at two separate occasions he showed up and faced down Ahab face to face. Now in this chapter 18 here, I want to go towards the end of it. And I this is an intriguing verse here. Verse 19 of chapter 18, they had this confrontation. Ahab in verse 17 calls him the troubler of Israel. And this is what Elijah says: I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, in that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals. Okay, I want you to see this here. And this is important. In this confrontation, what is the problem? Is there a problem here between Ahab and Elijah, a personal problem? No. But the problem is that Ahab is an idolater and a murderer. Now, I want you to see this. Ahab sees Elijah, and Ahab immediately makes it a personal thing. Is that you, O troubler of Israel? You know, Elijah, if it wasn't for you, you know, we could have a really nice kingdom around here. We could have a really nice time. We could, it just could be wonderful. But you know what? We killed a bunch of the prophets. We missed you. What a shame that was. And now you've got this rain thing going on. Back to 1 Kings 18 and verses 17 through 19. What we were just saying was that with Elijah it was very personal, with Ahab it was very personal. You know, is that you, O troubler of Israel? And what he wants Elijah to do here is he wants to get into back and forth with Elijah. No, I'm not a troubler of Israel. You are, that kind of thing. And Elijah does do that. He does go for and says, I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have. And then he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop with just a personal back and forth. He goes on to say, in that you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals. He got immediately to the real problem. We've all been, I know I've mentioned this before on Facebook and so forth, where we can get this personal thing. I know I've said this before. We don't need to talk about it too long, but even in a face-to-face discussion, it so often gets personal and it never gets off the personal. Yes, I did. No, I didn't. Whatever. Elijah immediately gets right to the problem. The problem here is not that I, Elijah, have called for no rain. That's not the problem. The problem is not that you killed the other prophets and missed me. The problem is that you and your father's house, you and the people before you, have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and have followed the Baals. My friends, if we don't understand this, we've got to pay attention here. Our problem is not the coronavirus. You can name 100 things. Our problem is we have quite forsaken the Lord, and we have followed all manner of idols, name it sports, name it money, name it wicked things we do to each other, anything but the commandments of Christ. And this is Psalm, we're living in Psalm 2 times. And see, the thing is, Psalm 2 talks about the wicked get together, and they say, let us break their bonds, meaning the people of God. Let us break away from the commandments of God. And that's really what they want to do. And that's really all that Ahab is doing here. Let's just get away from all God's commandments. And what's happening now in our media and in our present culture is exactly what Ahab is talking about here. We could have such a nice time if it wouldn't be for these Christians. In Ahab's case, we could have such a wonderful Israel, except for this troubler. The only trouble we have, according to Ahab, is Elijah. And Elijah's, no. The trouble is you and your father's house, you've forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you've followed the Baals. And he knows that the two cannot be done together. Now, there's another thing that happens here, and this is something that I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I have to think about it some more. I am convinced that wicked people will only fear the people of God if the people of God fear God more than the wicked person. I can't come up with anything else on this point. I just can't. Look what happens. Good. Okay. Look what happens here. Ahab, see this. Ahab had gone to so much trouble to look for Elijah, wanted to kill him, even went to other countries. When he runs into Obadiah, the king's chamberlain, Obadiah is like, you know, I'm so scared even to see you, Elijah. The Spirit of the Lord might pick you up and take you away, you know, and then Ahab will think I'm lying. And by the way, that whole Spirit of the Lord thing, taking people up, that does happen in the Bible. That happened in the Old Testament. It also happened in the New Testament with Philip after he spoke with the Ethiopian eunuch. You can look that up. But anyway, so Obadiah's concern was real, that the Spirit of the Lord would pick up Elijah, take him someplace else, and then Obadiah would be seen to be lying. Or worse yet, Ahab would come back and say, well, why don't you grab him, you know, and bring him to me? I'm going to kill you now for that, okay? So Ahab had been doing all this work, going through all this trouble to go and find Elijah and kill him. He finally finds him. And Ahab, or Elijah, does not get into a nice back and forth, smoke the peace pipe thing. He's just as direct with Ahab as he's ever been. And he says, you are the troubler of Israel. And then he gives a command. He gives a command to Ahab. Get this is what's going on here. He says, now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me on Mount Carmel, 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. And Ahab does it. How is it that this prophet that Ahab wanted to kill, moved heaven and earth to kill, finally meets him? And now it's Elijah giving the orders. How is that? And I can only explain that by saying we know that Elijah feared God more than he feared Ahab. And the fact that Elijah shows up by himself, you know that Ahab was out there with a whole retinue or whatever of people, big posse, all kinds of important people around. And Elijah just faces him down and says, now get all these people together. And Ahab does it. This is something that, again, I've been thinking about lately a lot, and I'm not really sure what all my conclusions are, but I am convinced of this. The wicked will never fear us if we don't fear God more than them. I think at this point, Ahab actually fears the guy that he was trying to kill. And that's why he does exactly what Elijah said. Now, one other thing here, that's brief on the character of Elijah. So much more could be said there. I want to talk now about Obadiah. And here's why I'm doing this morning, my friends, because I believe there's more than one way to serve God in difficult circumstances. We all love Elijah. He's such a gutsy guy. And we all love it in the story when he faces down Ahab, just like we love it when John the Baptist faces down Herod. What a beautiful thing it is to see the men of God, the courageous men of God, going into the wicked and telling them the way that it is. We all want to die like Elijah, though, but be raptured out, kind of like he was. Who wants to live like him, though? A dangerous life. But look at someone else who feared God greatly, Obadiah. Obadiah looks to us like not much of a guy. Scared. Living in the shadows. We don't want to be like Obadiah, do we? But I want you to see that he has quite an endorsement from the Bible itself. This guy, Obadiah, was a man of great responsibility. Verse 3, Ahab called Obadiah, who was in charge of his house. Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. Later on, Obadiah will say he fears God. Now we know that the writer of the Kings says the same thing. We have two testimonies that he feared the Lord greatly. Now, if the Bible didn't tell us this, we might doubt it. And we might say, you know, from our safe office in Pennsylvania, Obadiah, what good is he? You know, he's a wimpy scaredy cat. But look at verse 4. He feeds the prophets 50 to a cave. Feeds them with bread and water. Now, it would take some doing to feed 100 people right under the king's nose, people that the king is trying to kill, with bread and water. Remember, in this passage, they have to go out and they're trying to find food for the animals. They can hardly do it. This guy, Obadiah, is this.
Okay, I will.
So we know that Obadiah is feeding the prophets of God under the nose of Ahab. And it looks like the man didn't have courage, but I think he did, because he has to know that if Ahab ever found out what he was doing, Ahab would have absolutely had him killed. No question about it. Wouldn't have asked at all. So Obadiah has tremendous ability, a tremendous administrator, a tremendous, and I think tremendous courage as well. But he doesn't look at all like Elijah. Elijah is the guy confronting Ahab. Obadiah is the guy kind of working covertly. But understand this. This is the point I want to make. Both feared God. Both did. And Obadiah, in the end, we have this statement of a man who in his own way opposed Ahab. He didn't do it like Elijah, but he still opposed him. One of the things that we're going to run into as we go forward, both every one of you personally and every one of you in corporately church and so forth, we are going to face our challenges, my friends, as a state that is not friendly towards God, put it that way. And, we are to pray for our rulers and all in authority. That's what we're supposed to do. And that was done in the early church. But here's the problem that some of the men of the early church or the congregations, the people of the early church ran into. And that was that it was no favor to the emperors, the wicked emperors and the wicked magistrates, that the people of God were praying for them. They didn't want to be prayed for. They wanted to be prayed to. Understand that. They wanted to be prayed to. And as long as you and I pray to God for them, that's not too exciting for them. They want to be prayed to. And right now, John and I were talking about this the other day. Right now, we see a lot of faith in action. And we see tremendous faith in the state right now. I mean, talk to almost anyone. It's like, well, what's the government going to do? And that is the question on almost everybody's lips. And that's why it becomes more and more important who the president is, because we need that great savior, the head of the state, to fix everything. And that is a very worrisome thing, but the faith is definitely there. What am I saying? I am saying that faithfulness to God in this case looked different to two different people. It looked like one thing to Elijah, and it looked differently to Obadiah. But the point is, or the clear thing is, we must be faithful. And that's my message here this morning. You and I must understand what faithfulness looks like. We have big questions in front of us. We are indeed in a lockdown situation. Every one of us must ask ourselves, what thing are we not being faithful in now that we must be faithful in later, or even later on today? It's said very clearly, if you're faithful in small things, I will make you faithful in large things or in the big things. You know, for me, I'm looking down the road and I'm asking myself, where are we going to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? I sure don't know. But then I have to ask myself this, what can I be faithful in now? I can't be faithful in something 10 years down the road because I'm not 10 years down the road. But what about now? What can I be faithful in now? Both Elijah and Obadiah were very faithful men, but it looked differently to each one of them. I want to take a moment here to read something from John Bunyan. And John Bunyan, the writer, of course, from Pilgrim's Progress. And he has something to say to us now. I don't think we have to apply this exactly the way he's saying, but I want to underline my point. The faithfulness to God may not always look exactly the same to everyone. I believe, for example, during the Puritan Wars, if you will, prior to Oliver Cromwell, during Charles I, who also had a wife who hated the Puritans, you had a couple of different types of people. You had the Puritans who wanted to stay and try to purify basically the Anglican Church. And you had the separatists, the pilgrims, who felt that this thing was not worth trying to purify. It was beyond hope. And they got in the Speedwell and the Mayflower, ultimately just the Mayflower, and they separated themselves. And I believe both were faithful. This is a passage from John Bunyan, a man of great courage, who, as we know, wrote the second bestseller in all of the West, at least. The number one bestseller is the Bible. The next bestseller is is Pilgrim's Progress. And I want to just read this briefly, and I want you to hopefully remember this. And this is an essay that he wrote called "To Flee or Stay." To Flee or to Stay by John Bunyan. And he asks this question: may we not fly in a time of persecution? You're pressing upon us that persecution is ordered and managed by God. That makes us afraid to fly. In other words, he's saying if God sends a persecution, then you're not allowed to flee. You're not allowed to run. He goes on to say, first, having regard to what was said before about a call to suffer, thou mayest do in this even as it is in thy heart. If it is in thy heart to fly, fly. If it be in thy heart to stand, stand. Anything but a denial of the truth. He that flies has warrant to do so. He that stands has warrant to do so. And you see Bunyan here getting right to the point of the matter here. Whatever you do, you cannot deny the truth. You cannot deny Christ. And he goes on to say, yes, the same man may both fly and stand as the call and working of God with his heart may be. Moses fled in Exodus 2:15. We know that. He flew from the face of Pharaoh, and then he stood when he went back and faced Pharaoh. David fled when he ran away from Saul, and then he stood up to Saul as well. Jeremiah fled, and Jeremiah stood. Christ withdrew himself in Luke. Christ stood in John, and Paul did the same thing. Paul fled at one time. Remember, they left him out of the in a basket over the city wall, and he also stood. And Bunyan goes on to say this: there are therefore few rules in this case. The man himself is best able to judge concerning his present strength and what weight this or that argument has upon his heart to stand or fly. I should be loath to impose upon any other man in these things. Only if thou flyest, take two or three cautions with thee. And he goes on to say some cautions about running or whatever. Point is this: I don't think we're to the point yet. I believe we're not there by a long shot of what we have to do in terms of this type of persecution. We know the gospel. We know the gospel of Christ is under attack. My word, when you can't even put up a manger scene in a public place, man, oh day, but you can have a drag queen come in and anyway, we know where things are right now. Our point, and Bunyan's point, and I believe the point from First Kings 18, our point is that we must be faithful. It may not look the same in every case. Now, why am I bringing this up now as I wrap this up? Well, what can happen in these situations is some people might suffer more than others. And when things get bad, or if things get bad, and what happens then is that some may envy each other, or, hey, I'm standing up. Why isn't he standing up? And there can be all kinds of breakdown within the body of Christ. I am not one of those guys, bless their hearts, I know they're out there, that says, what this church needs is a good deal of persecution. You know, kind of like a doctor. You know, let's go to the doctor and get a dose of persecution, and that should solve everything. In the history of persecution, that's not the way it hasn't worked that way. I mean, it has in some cases. But most of the time, it breaks people up because they think that their faithfulness should all look the same, and it doesn't necessarily. I don't really have a whole lot to say beyond that, except to take this lesson from Obadiah and Elijah and from Bunyan here, take that with us going forward, and shall we close with a word of prayer. We thank you, Lord, for the fact that nothing we've seen is new. Your people have been in the minority before. Your people have also been faithful before. And we pray, O Lord, that that would be our prayer today. More than anything, we would be faithful, that we would hear, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." That's what we would hear. May our loyalty be to you, and may our fear be of you. And may it be said of us that in the end we feared you more than the face of man, as your godly servants have. How they inspire us, these godly men who loved you and feared you and did what was right. May that be us, we pray. It's in the name of Christ we ask it. Amen.